This is John Purcello, and you are listening to Fascination Street Podcast.
I believe that everybody has a story, and I'm fascinated to hear them. So come with me as we take a walk down Fascination Street. Welcome back, Streetwalkers. This episode is with actor Paul Sadeau. Paul Sadeau is rapidly becoming a major force in independent cinema, having recently completed 7 different films in which he is one of the stars. He is also a writer and a producer, and wait for it, he has a successful practice as a dermatologist in Los Angeles. What? In this episode, we talk about all of that, why he wanted to be a doctor, why he's still a doctor, even though he's a successful movie star, and how long he plans on doing both at the same time. We talk about shooting in Mexico, shooting a Bollywood film, and then we talk about his newest film, Repeater, which is available everywhere on VOD right now. It is an action-adventure thriller starring, of course, Paul Sadeau, as well as Christiana Loken, Gary Daniels, and the great Corbin Burnson. Directed by R. Ellis Fraser, and once again, it is available everywhere on VOD right now. And this is my conversation with doctor, actor, producer, and writer, Paul Sadeau. You talk to me, yeah. Welcome to Fascination Street Podcast, Paul Sadeau. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Did I say your name right, Sadeau?
Sadeau, yes, you did.
All right, fantastic. What I like to do is I like to start from the beginning, man. It helps us understand how you got to be who you are. So where were you born and raised? Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, raised in the greater Seattle, Washington area. You know, went to school out there, University of Washington, and eventually out to New Orleans, and then down here to Los Angeles.
My daughter, about a year and a half ago, moved right outside of Seattle. I think it's out of Seattle. Olympia, that's a place, right?
Yeah. Olympia is the capital of the state, and it's about a couple hours south of Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess recently, within the last 6 months or so, she moved to Centralia.
Centralia, okay, yeah. As the name implies, that's more in the center.
Oh, okay. Well, is it far from Olympia or no? Why am I asking you? You didn't.
Probably a couple hours. Yeah.
Are you a map maker? I'm so sorry.
I'm not a map maker. No.
All right. Well, let's move on to Tulane. So tell me about New Orleans. Is it hot there? I'm just kidding. Paul, what did you want to be when you grew up?
When I was a student, like in high school, mm-hmm. I wanted to pursue the field of medicine. So I was very interested in the healing arts, and that's where I had my entire focus.
What drew you to that path? Why medicine?
It started in my undergraduate training. So I was originally a psychology student. So I was doing a Bachelor of Arts in psychology. I was always fascinated with the mind and how practical applications can help a way a person views the world and themselves. So I went into psychology, and while I was doing my psychology bachelor's, I worked on a project called Seasonal Affective Disorder Project, where we were looking at how the lack of sunlight affects mood. And while I was on that research team, we were working in the hospital system, and I was able to interact with some medical doctors. And it was at that point I decided, you know, I really find what these other guys are doing across the aisle super interesting and fascinating. So I switched from psychology into pursuing medicine, and then eventually got into medical school at Tulane University.
I have to imagine your parents were pretty excited when you decided to become a doctor.
They were happy. They were supportive in most anything I endeavored to do, but they were and are proud of me.
Did they have a path for you? Like, did they have a plan for their baby?
No, they didn't. The major thing that my parents would stress to me is that, you know, you want to have an education of some sort. You want to be able to have some form of university training to help you view the world through a different lens. and put you on a professional path. So they never pushed me towards, you know, for instance, being like an entrepreneur. They weren't very business minded, but they did have a strong belief in individuals having a firm education. So based on that, I had sort of a wide variety of things to choose from, be it law, engineering, many of the sciences, but I ended up pursuing medicine.
So they were like, we don't really care what you do as long as you go to university and kind of, I don't know if it's the same now, but I think that especially with our parents, university helps you learn how to think for yourself and helps you learn how to interact with other people and in systems and in social settings, right? And that's part of the college experience. And arguably, it's the most important part of the college experience, depending on, you know, I mean, obviously, you're going to need medical training. But for the average person who's not in a specifically technical field, I think that's probably one of the biggest parts of going to university. Is that what they wanted you to gain out of it? They didn't really care what you did as long as you kind of got that?
Agreed. Yeah, that was the fundamental core principle, is that you come out with a certain skill set in regards to how you can interact and view the world. And I think that gives you an advantage in life. And I think that's why it's important for everyone to really, I still feel that way, to give it a go, you know, go into the university system, see how you feel, see how it, you know, see, don't like just, you know, write it off because the economy is bad, et cetera. I mean, I think that's a valuable experience.
Rad. Why dermatology?
Well, I was very visually oriented. So when I got into medical school, I went through all the rotations and I found that in that field, you had the least amount of use of diagnostic equipment. Like we weren't sending patients for radiological examinations or necessarily any type of imaging, but a lot of it was based on recognizing patterns of disease. And also you work with your hands quite a bit. So that combination of the tactile experience and being somewhat dexterous, as well as just having appreciation for visual diagnosis, is what propelled me in that direction.
Does everybody say to you, hey, I got this thing, can you take a look at it? Do you get that a lot?
I do, yeah.
Does it drive you insane?
No, it doesn't. It's still kind of interesting because even when I'm on a movie set, it's interesting because usually when I'm filming, you know, they know me as Paul Sadu, the actor, or Mr. Sadu. And so no one really, you know, delves into my history. But occasionally somebody will find out. And then when they do, it's like, if anything happens, they, you know, they'll come to me and go, hey, you know, a dog bit my leg. Can you take a look at it? I'm like, yeah.
Is that the kind of thing that you do as well? I know that dermatology is, you know, skin issues and whatnot, but like you can take a look at dog bites and whatnot?
You can, yeah. I mean, you have the fundamental medical training. I did a surgical internship as well before dermatology. So yeah, we can pretty much take a look at any part of the skin and whatever's happened to it.
Oh, rad. Hey, I got this thing. We take a look at it. What is a dermatological surgeon? What is that?
So a dermatologic surgeon is a dermatologist who specialized in taking care of or treating skin cancers. So they have an extra level of expertise in the treatment of both melanoma and non-melanoma skin cancers, the excision, the removal, and the repair. And they're a subspecialty unto themselves.
Is that part of what you do as well?
Yeah, I became double board certified. So I'm board certified by the American Board of Medical Specialties in dermatology, as well as micrographic dermatologic surgery.
That's a lot of words, man.
Yeah.
You graduate, you start your practice, things are going great. You're healing the world, one dog bite and melanoma at a time, and then all of a sudden something happens. Why did you decide that in addition to maintaining this, what I have to imagine is a very time-consuming full-time job, why did you decide to get into the industry? You are an actor, a writer, and a producer. Why? Why the change?
I spent my formative years focusing on the pursuit of the healing arts, and I got a great amount of satisfaction from that and fulfillment. And once I had graduated and gotten out into private practice and I became, you know, fairly successful at it, I guess intellectually, I started to plateau in the sense that, You know, I'm here doing what I've always wanted to do, and this is great. At the same time, there's sort of a nexus between me plateauing intellectually and coming into contact with friends who were in the arts. Because since I finished my training at the University of Southern California, that kind of deposited me in Los Angeles. And the people that I surrounded myself, or my friends at the time, were artists or individuals in the entertainment industry. So I started looking at what they were doing and, you know, carrying on conversations with them. And I found that what they were doing was, number one, extremely intriguing. Number two, and probably the most important thing, it looked like a lot of fun. Like, they were all having a lot of fun. They were working hard, but they were enjoying themselves. So I had a bit of a cultural renaissance at that point. And I said to myself, you know, I think I could do this as well. And I went after it.
Did you encounter, or were you surprised by, once you did get into the industry, were you surprised by the people in the industry and how they're kind of different than maybe the upfront honesty that you're used to in your previous life?
Yeah, that was something I had to learn through just various interactions. Unfortunately, a lot of the industry, they don't follow the same ethical code, I would say, as some other industries. Your word is not necessarily your bond in the entertainment industry. So you really got to be, I guess, litigious is one thing. You got to make sure you're covered completely. You have to be careful. I'm naturally a very trusting person and have a strong belief in the good of humanity. That was tested a bit in my first interactions in the industry. But now I've come across just so many wonderful people in the industry that sort of I'm okay with it. And you know, you kind of know when you're dealing with someone who's not on the up and up.
I have to imagine that since you were, at least early on, so interested in the psychology of people, I'm guessing, maybe I'm projecting, that now that you've been around the industry people, you have kind of noticed, kind of like a poker tell. Maybe you've figured out when and how much full of garbage some of these people are.
Yeah, there's certain personality types that come through, and you can look at certain traits and mannerisms. Yeah, you can make a general assessment. So it does help.
I feel like you're a little bit ahead of the game on that, because, you know, it's kind of an advantage that you have that psychological profiling brain going on the whole time you're talking to different people. Hopefully that serves you well.
Thank you.
Did you notice any sort of reaction, or do you notice a reaction when people find out what you do besides acting? I know a lot of people, they'll have other jobs where they're a waitress or they're a bartender or they're whatever. Is there any type of reaction from people when they find out that you have a successful medical practice as your day job?
Yeah, there is. So there's two reactions you get. Firstly, there's one where they view you a little differently. Like when they find out that you're financially stable and comfortable, a lot of the artists will tend to view you as a suit, meaning like, oh, well, this guy's actually on the production side. He's not necessarily one of us. Because you're not a starving artist. Exactly. I remember when I did my first film, the director was like, you can't tell anybody about this. You can't tell anyone that you're a doctor, man. And if you have a nice car, don't even roll up in that. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. He goes, you know, you got to be a starving artist. You know, that's how you're going to make it. And I was like,
you got to have street cred.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, okay, well, I said, but you know, my counter argument to that was, well, I've worked really hard. It's not like somebody threw a bunch of money in my lap. I mean, I've worked extremely hard my entire life and dedicated myself and committed myself to a principle. And I'm not sure if that's something that it's a good idea for me to hide. But in the beginning, I used to get that. Now things, I think, have kind of changed, because what I'm noticing is that successful actors are now doing other things, right? They're getting into businesses, like they're owning companies, like whether it's mobile phones or...
It's alcohol. It's all alcohol.
Or alcohol, Right. So now it's a little different. Now, you know, for the first time, like in the last like 2-3 years, people will find out and they'll be like, hey, that's really cool. You know, that's impressive. Like, how do you balance the two? So there's two extremes. There's one side where people are genuinely impressed. They're like, how do you juggle that? How do you get two sides of your mind working? And then there's the other side, which says, oh, well, if you got to be an actor, that's all you can be. And I always counter that. Like, I think you can be more than one thing in life if you put your mind to it. You don't have to be one or the other. There are many roles and faces that you can take on as a human being. And I strongly believe that.
Yeah, I feel like nowadays you kind of have to be multifaceted. You have to have multiple things you do because who knows, anything can happen. I mean, you know, we just are still coming out of a period where the only people who were really allowed to work were, you know, medical professionals. Thank God you were able to do that.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's true.
Do you run into scheduling issues? Like you need to be on location in Atlanta. Is somebody going to cover your practice, or you just hang a sign on the door that says be back in 5 months?
No. You know, if you're in medicine, you've got to be extremely responsible and tactical when it comes to taking time off. So all the projects that I engage in, I know ahead of time, you know, when they're going to be, obviously. I have a lot of prep time. So, you know, I can do the prep time on my own hours. And then when I'm gone, you know, everyone's covered. So there's no lack of coverage. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good thing if I just took off.
Was that one of the hardest parts about having a foot in both pools? Is that the scheduling and the managing of both lives? Both of those lives are very demanding.
It is demanding, but scheduling isn't that difficult. Like if you put your mind to it and you can compartmentalize the different things you're doing, I think it's not difficult at all. What is extremely difficult in this industry is that a lot of this industry that I'm finding has to do with networking. That's critical. So like, you know, are you going to the right places at the right time? Are you showing up to these events, et cetera? Because that's how you meet people. And I've noticed that when I'm at certain events for movies I've been in, I'll see like how when individuals meet a director or producer, they're sort of at the forefront of their mind. And then it's easier to make a connection or land a role later on. So that's my major disadvantage when I talk to people and they're like, hey, you know, you should really show up to this event or go to this party or do this or do that. I don't do any of that because I can't. So fundamentally, I stay focused. I'm either working as an actor or I'm working in my current field. Not a lot of time for this aspect of networking, which I think is really important. And if you can do it and you're living out there on the West Side and you're able to, I think that's wonderful and it can only benefit you.
I think funerals is the place to do it. Everybody's sad. Everybody's off guard. You don't have to be sad or off guard because you don't know anybody. If you just funeral crash, that's what you should do. Everybody listening, network by crashing funerals of famous dead people. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
How difficult was the decision, or maybe it wasn't at all, but tell me about the decision to not quit practicing.
No, that wasn't difficult at all. You see, I have a certain special set of skills that I've acquired over all these years. That's right.
But somebody got taken. You have a special set of skills.
And I've spent years honing this craft. And for me to walk away from it, I think would just be an injustice to, you know, all the training that I've done and the work that I can still do in the world in the healing arts. So I've always known in the back of my mind, I'm going to balance both of them.
Well, I mean, coming to mind is that fool, Dr. Ken Jeong, that guy, he don't practice no more.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for him. I'm not sure. You know,
I'm asking you as a doctor to speak for him, please.
Yeah.
And go.
Okay.
No.
Hey, Streetwalkers. Here's a word from our sponsors. Let's get back into it.
Okay. So you've been in, oh my God, a lot of movies. You have been in Bollywood movies?
I've been in one Bollywood movie. Yeah, that was my first one.
Okay, why? How is what I mean? Because you're in Los Angeles, you're working your ass off, and then your first movie is on the other side of the planet in a whole different industry. How did that happen?
Yeah, so that was all on me. When I was sitting here with my friends and we were discussing like potentially going into the into the acting realm, part of my conversation was, well, like, is there a different way to do it? Is there a different way to do it than going to the right parties, going to all the casting calls? And when they were like, yeah, you know, you need to come up with an idea, write, or, you know, get a co-writer and see if you can create something that calls to you that you can also be a part of. And so that's what I did. And at the time, I felt a calling to do something in India because culturally, that's my background. And I had a great respect for Bollywood cinema growing up because my parents would watch those kind of movies. So I said to myself, you know, this might be a path of lesser resistance than trying to do a novel movie in Hollywood. So that's why I chose that path. And we eventually came up with a script and I produced it and we got the funding for it and went over there and found a bunch of veteran actors who wanted to work with us, which was really shocking, but we were happy and we did it. It was a lot of fun.
Was it an easier way to get your feet wet?
No, I don't think so. I think it was difficult because I went out there, we did the film, and then during the filming, we had a lot of positive response from the people involved with the film and peripheral people in the industry as well. And so they came to me and they said, like, hey, we see a future for you here, but you have to stay here. I don't know why. I never thought of that, like going into this. And then when I finished Aukri Decision, I was like, you know, they're right. I mean, the only way to really successfully move forward acting in that arena is you really can't be a seasonal actor. You know, you have to be entrenched in that part of the world. And I was like, I can't do that. And so I had to kind of come back, finish the whole publicity cycle, the film. The film was very successful. It did really well, but then I had to leave it aside. I had to just leave that industry completely because I wanted to have a life out here and I wanted to do films more in an English medium. It was kind of almost like starting over. And that's what led to 2307 Winter's Dream.
I know that most Bollywood films have a dance number. Was there dancing in yours?
There was, yeah. I had two dance numbers.
How fun was that?
That was a lot of fun. I wish I had more time to train, but the dance choreographers, they had a couple days with me and I'm not a dancer, but it was a blast and we had a really good time.
So then you come back to the United States and like you said, basically you have to start over. Did you start over by writing another project for yourself?
Yeah. So I said, well, you know, that formula seemed to work over there. So let's come up with something over here that's close to me or close to my heart. And I've always had a huge fascination for science fiction. So I came up with a concept for a science fiction piece, but I really didn't know how to tell the story properly. I kind of knew the bare bones of it. So I became friends with a guy named Joey Curtis. And Joey Curtis was one of the writers on Blue Valentine. And he happened to be a sci-fi nerd as well. So even though he knows how to write drama, and the piece was a science fiction drama, he really had a panache for science fiction. He kind of knew all the lingo and terminology that I knew. So we put our heads together and produced this screenplay. And, you know, we were able to get that done. And that did really fortunately and luckily well for us. We got it distributed with Vertical and ended up on Netflix and everybody was happy and it was great. It was a wonderful experience.
And which one was this?
2307 Winter's Dream.
It is my understanding you are currently working on a sequel?
I am, yeah. Me and my writing buddy Robert Mearns, we've just done our like final pass and we're just tweaking everything. And originally it wasn't made for a sequel, but the film does end in a precarious way. And I've gotten enough interest and feedback from people who've seen the film that I know that there's an appetite for a sequel. So I was like, yeah, man, let's write and let's see what we can come up with. And after we're done writing, if it really is something special, then let's do it. Let's try and produce it.
Right now, your newest film on VOD everywhere is called Repeater.
Right.
It is an action thriller. You do a lot of action movies. Why?
I did. So I chose initially to write characters for myself that are extremely far removed from what I do. So I'm into the healing arts. My purpose is, how do I heal the human body? So I decided, let's play some characters that are really focused on killing or destroying the human body. And so that was how it started. And the first two films happened to be action pieces. And then, you know, in this industry, if you do something and it calls to a certain group of people, then you sort of get picked up for that same genre. But I transitioned into some movies that are considered comedies that are coming out a little later. But yeah, for now, I think there's a few action pieces coming out. Yeah.
In the near future and recent past, you've got like 7 films coming out or something crazy, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Or all of these filmed before COVID and they're just now seeing the light of day, or have you just been that busy?
Yeah, there's like 3 of them that are in the final stages of filming right now. And then there was 2 that were like right before COVID and just got released now. And then the other 2 were just before COVID and were released before COVID.
How do you feel about this success that you're having so early in this career? I feel like a lot of actors, I was talking to an actress a couple of weeks ago who she was in a huge movie and then based on that moved to Los Angeles to become a movie star and then almost never did anything again for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So based on all of the, I mean, you've had really, really big success so early in, you know, again, this, it's disrespectful to say side career because it's a full-time career, but
yeah.
How do you feel about your early success?
I feel good in the sense that I think every show that we're putting out or every show that I'm involved with, I feel is getting better and it's leveling up. So it's more of the journey before the destination. So the journey has been fruitful and interesting. And the things I'm doing are mentally very stimulating. And I'm always looking forward to the next project and how we can accomplish it on these independent budgets so that I don't think we can rival the studio films, but we can certainly provide audiences with that same entertaining experience. I feel good. There's a long ways to go and I'm learning a lot. So far, I'm thankful for where I'm at.
Is there a certain amount of luck involved in all of the success that you've had so far?
I think so. I think the first film I did, Awkward Decision, I think we were very lucky with that in regards to how it did in the box office. I think after that, these projects, we were fortunate enough to get funding and distribution from companies that at the time were looking for projects like that. It wasn't like planned. For instance, Vertical wants a small sci-fi at that time. We didn't really plan it that way. It sort of happened after the fact. So I think that's definitely some luck. And then once you start surrounding yourself with individuals who have a forward mindset and who are also trying to accomplish similar goals, I think you tend to do better. You tend to have a synergistic effect when it comes to your art and your capabilities. But luck is definitely there.
Well, I'm glad that you recognize that and you're honest about that with yourself as well as the hard work. I like that you are pragmatic about both of those things being very important in what you're doing. I think that's really a realistic approach for what that's worth. Tell me about Repeater. What's it about? What does your character do? And are you mean?
Yeah, so Repeater is basically, I'm a hitman. And my job is to track down this French hacker who's going to expose this large conglomerate. And the French hacker is played by Nick Moran. And my job is to seek, find, and kill him. But along the ways, I have a change of heart due to various reasons. And there's also a couple other assassins who have targeted him as well. And so it's an interesting story about how this character's relationship with his mark changes, as well as the relationship with the other assassins, because they have a history together, kind of like a brotherhood, if you will. And so it's more a story about relationships set in this action piece. So it was a lot of fun. And I think it's a really interesting movie.
Are you an actor, a writer, a producer, 2 or all 3 of these things? Are you just acting in this or you do wear another hats?
So in Repeater, I'm just the actor.
How does that feel? It's got to be easier, right? And more fun.
Yeah, it's a lot easier. You can focus on the character 100% of the time. You don't have a lot of these other concerns or distractions. So yeah, it's definitely way, way better and a lot funner too. You know, it's a lot funner just to be the actor. It's great.
So in this film, Repeater, again, it's available on VOD everywhere. Besides the great and wonderful Dr. Paul Sadu, does it say doctor on the credits?
No.
Come on, why not, dude? You earned it.
No, we're just Paul Sadu's good, yeah.
All right, so besides Dr. Paul, no, just kidding. So besides Paul Sadu, there's Corbin Burnson, Gary Daniels, and Christiana Loken.
Oh, yeah.
Is this just from an audition, your agent, that kind of a thing, a regular old thing, or did you meet somebody at an aforementioned cemetery and then hook up with them, and now you're in a movie?
Right. So once again, this has to do with luck, right? So we finished Winter's Dream, and one of the producers on Winter's Dream was a fellow named Robert Beaumont with Ultramedia. And about 6 months after the completion of Winter's Dream, he was working on a spec script in a project called Hustle Down. And this was a two-hander, a movie led by Tom Sizemore, and they needed a straight man opposite Tom Sizemore. So Beaumont's working on this project, and the director who was attached to it was this guy named R. Ellis Frazier. And so Frazier watches 2307 on Netflix, and he's like, "Beaumont, you're a producer on this film. Who is that dude?" And the guy's like, "Oh, that's Paul Sadu." And he goes, "Well, how do we get a hold of him?" And so Frazier connected with Beaumont, and Beaumont told Frazier, he said, "Yeah, man, if you want a straight man for this project, this is the guy."
Is it because you never smile?
Is it because I never smile? Yeah, that's probably it. So Frazier looked at the rushes for Winter's Dream, and then, you know, we talked on the phone and we talked about the character. And then I got the gig for Hustle Down with Tom Sizemore. And so we did that film.
In Mexico?
In down in Mexico, yeah. And while we were filming Hustle Down, I didn't know it, but Frazier was basically auditioning me for Repeater because he had the Repeater project in his pocket and he knew he was shooting that about 6 to 8 months later. And so when Hustle Down was done, he was like, "Hey, Paul, let's talk." And I was like, "Okay, cool. I thought, you know, it was going to be like, good job and, you know, nice working with you." We did all the pleasantries. Then he was like, "Hey, I've got this other project. I think you're the man for the job. Do you want to do it?" And I was like, I read it and I was like, "Yeah, man, let's do it. I had a lot of fun with you. I love your style." And that's how I got into Repeater.
That's Repeater. It's available, like I said, on VOD everywhere.
Yeah. It's in select theaters too.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Not by the time this comes out.
Okay.
So what is it like seeing your big silly face on a giant screen?
It kind of makes you cringe a little bit because you look at yourself. Well, at least I do. You know, I try and analyze where I'm making mistakes or where I feel like I could have made different choices. So it's a bit uncomfortable, but you get through it. And I think you have to look. I know there's some actors that just don't look and they're like, "Okay, we're moving on to the next one." But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like there's a great opportunity that might be missed. If you can look and analyze yourself and maybe correct some things, it's kind of like replaying a game and looking at which plays worked, which ones didn't. That's the approach I take.
So your first movie was a Bollywood movie. Did you take your whole family to go see your theatrical debut?
No, I didn't. I had like some extended family there, like my uncle and my aunt who accompanied me, but no, not the whole family.
So earlier I asked you, what was your parents' expectation of you? Or, you know, they had to be excited that you became a doctor. Did they have thoughts when you said, "Oh yeah, and also, you know how I have all that free time, like those 4 free hours every day that I'm not sleeping? I'm going to go be a movie star." Did they have a reaction to that or an opinion?
Well, you know, I sort of just did it because since my parents live in Seattle and I live in Los Angeles.
And also you're a grown-ass adult and you don't have to ask their permission.
Yeah, so exactly. So, you know, I talk to my mom frequently and, you know, she knows I'm doing well and I'm fine. I check in with her. But at the same time, I kept doing it. And I said, you know what, I'll let him know when the movie's out. So once it was done, then I was like, "Hey, by the way, I made a movie and this is it. I'd like you to see it. Tell your friends about it. It's going to be in a theater in Seattle, et cetera." And then my mom was like, "Whoa, really? What's going on here?" She was excited. She was cool about it.
Was she like surprised? Like, what? What's happening? What?
Yeah, she was surprised. She's like, what? She goes, how did you do that?
When?
And she's like, what are you doing over there? I was like, well, you know, just living life. And
Mom, it's LA. I have to make a movie. It's required.
Right.
Okay, you worked on Hosted Down with Tom Sizemore. He sometimes has a reputation.
Yeah.
How was it working with him?
It was outstanding. When I was working with him, he was super excited. He was always very, very friendly. The interesting thing about working with him was it was like a crash course in drama school, because like every day he'd be like, Paul, come over here. I'd be like, what's going on? He goes, let me tell you what Robert De Niro told me. And I was like, okay. Or let me tell you what Tom Hanks once told me. You know, he said, you know, Johnny Depp. I'm like, yeah, I kind of heard of him. He's like, well, me and Johnny had this conversation. So it was great. Like every day he was giving me these like pearls from basically all these major entertainers. He's like, you know, maybe approach it this way, approach it that way. So I had my concept of like how I wanted to do Turk going into Hustle Down. But every scene, like, you know, if Tom had some critique of what I was doing, he would just tell me. And I had no problems with it because, like, you know, he's been in some movies like that are my all time favorites, like, you know, Heat and Saving Private Ryan. So I just listened. I was like, okay, this is cool. And I just listened to what he had to say and I used what I could. So it was a really great experience. He's a very kind and generous dude.
That is awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that your experience working with Tom was memorable and in a good way. It sounds like it was really educational and also like a lot of fun.
It was.
What are your plans? Are you going to keep doing both? Are you going to keep wearing both hats? Are you going to keep driving both cars at the same time?
Yeah, I think I can do that. Mm-hmm.
What about, stop me if you don't want me to ask or don't want to answer. What about your romantic life, dude? Do you even have time to have a romantic life? You sound super busy.
So I have kids.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I have three children. I love them very, very much. And what I do is from Friday evening to Sunday night, it's nothing but them. So yeah, everything has strictly dedicated time. So that's my dedicated time for the kids, that window. I do everything I possibly can with them because it's so rewarding. And, you know, I don't want to miss any of these experiences. So yeah, I definitely do have time. My weekdays are extremely accounted for. So like from the time I wake up in the morning to the time I go to sleep, every aspect of it is calculated, like my nutrition, my exercise, my work life, whether I'm working on a script, having the meetings. So it's a full day with no rest. I like walking. So I will take like this 30-minute walk in the middle of the day and then, you know, another one in the evening. So that kind of helps kind of recenter me.
Decompress.
But yeah, so I have time for the family. I certainly do. And then, you know, there's the vacations, you know, and, you know, wherever we go, we make these massive memories. And, you know, we're always like trying to do two big trips a year. And I want to make sure they have these memories. And sometimes I'll take them to the same place again to help like solidify those memories. So that way when they're older and I'm gone, they can remember, yeah, my dad, he used to do this with us. He used to take us here and all that stuff. So very important to me being a father. I think that's the most important hat I wear, actually.
I'm going to say that that's true just from me watching you. We talked about school. We talked about medicine. We talked about your business. We talked about all of your acting and some of your movies. But it was only when we were talking about your kids that I got to see your smile.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
You're all very serious about all that other stuff, but you get all happy and fuzzy when you're talking about your kids. I think that's fantastic.
Right.
Are you going to start doing that thing where you write projects in locations that you want to take your kids to? Like Adam Sandler, he writes a Hawaii movie every year so he can take his family on vacation?
No, I don't think so. I'm looking for screenplays and roles that really call to me. So we'll see where it takes me.
All right. Fantastic. Once again, most recent and current movie is called Repeater. It is on VOD everywhere. Paul, Dr. Sidhu.
Okay.
Is this mole cancerous? and other things. Is that going to be the name of your memoir? Is This Mole Cancerous and Other Things I Heard on Film Sets?
Right.
Paul, where did the time go, my man?
A lot of fun.
I can't wait to see this movie. I'm looking very much forward to it.
Cool. Thank you.
My wife is not an action movie person, but she does things for me sometimes to make me happy. So this will be that thing.
All right. Sounds good, man.
Before I let you go, Paul, is there anything we didn't talk about or I didn't ask you about that you wanted to talk about today? Did I miss anything?
No, I think you're good. I think we're good. Yeah.
All right. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
So I am at The Real Paul Sadu on Instagram.
That's it? Just Instagram? The only place?
That's it.
Do you have a website or anything?
I don't.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the Los Angeles area and you can't figure out what that thing is on the side of your neck, look in the yellow pages and find Dr. I'm just kidding. Right. Paul Sadu, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day and your extremely hectic doctor and movie making schedule to hang out and let us get to know you a little bit better on Fascination Street, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It is 100% my pleasure. And you have a great rest of your week, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Opening music is the song Magnolia from the 2001 album Intransigence, used with permission from Douglas Miles Clark. Closing music is from the song Say My Name off the 2021 album Underdog Anthems, used with permission from Jax Hollow. If you like the show, tell a friend, subscribe, and rate and review the show on iTunes and wherever else you download podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. All the episodes are available there as well. Check me out on Vero at Fascination Street Pod and TikTok at Fascination Street Pod. And again, thanks for listening.